case of the day, 112766, United States versus James Elliott. Good morning, Ms. Prasad.
Good morning, Your Honors. Morning, Counsel. May it please the Court, my name is Vinayaka Prasad, and I'm here on behalf of James Elliott. There are three issues that have been briefed for this Court regarding the applicability of the Armed Career Criminal Act. But I would like to start with the question of whether Almendarez-Torres creates an all-or-nothing standard, or whether recidivism inquiry has distinct components that are not each exempt from the jury trial guarantees of the Sixth Amendment, simply because that entire recidivist inquiry relates to prior convictions. Now, the question is whether a single statute can contain both references to generic crimes, which, according to the limitations that are set by the Supreme Court in Shepard, can be decided by a sentencing judge, but also at the same time have references to fact-specific circumstances that require fact-finding too far removed from the record of a prior conviction to be left to sentencing alone. Now, to understand the distinction between these two types of inquiries, we have to look to the root of Almendarez-Torres and what that exception really stands for. Now, Almendarez-Torres, if it does continue to be a valid exception to the Sixth Amendment jury trial guarantees, is a valid exception not because of its label as a recidivist inquiry or an inquiry into sentencing factors, but its continuing viability would be based upon the nature of its inquiry, which is a nature into a prior record. It is a review of fact-finding that has already been completed by a prior judge or jury beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, in the case of the Armed Career Criminal Act, determining whether a prior conviction exists does fall within the same goals that the original court adjudicating a prior conviction was attempting to determine. The goal of the original court was certainly to determine whether to establish a valid conviction. And so a reviewing court, a sentencing court, reviewing that record can determine whether a valid conviction exists because
those
goals...
Should we try to review it over again, determine whether there were three convictions, right?
Yes, Your Honor. In this case,
what would we review? Say that those were not valid convictions, or have to look behind to see whether they were valid convictions, or whether there's whatever you do on the first appeal.
Yes, Your Honor. So there are two separate inquiries. That is the argument. One would be certainly to determine whether there is a valid prior conviction, and of course, in this case, three valid prior convictions that could act as predicate offenses. And that in and of itself is a reference to the fact of a prior conviction. That is what Almendarez-Torres is discussing. Determining whether those prior convictions also fall within the narrow category of generic crimes required by the Armed Career Criminal Act, that too is a reference to the fact of a prior conviction. Because the original court adjudicating those convictions, its goal was to determine whether the elements of that crime were met. That is what the record was intending to establish.
Okay, I'd like to interrupt. So what you're saying is in this case, that the trial judge in this particular case, there were the three convictions, but when he sentenced, and there was a plea of guilty, I believe, here, right?
Yes.
And when he sentenced the defendant on those three convictions, two of the sentences were consecutive, and then one ran concurrent.
That's correct.
So based on what you're trying to tell us, that we need to look at perhaps what the trial judge, so maybe the trial judge is saying really they're only looking at the simultaneous versus sequential, that the trial judge is saying, oh, there's two that were simultaneous, so we only have two convictions here actually for purposes of the armed career criminal.
Yes, Your Honor. And as far as the separation between these prior convictions, that is actually something that was raised in front of the sentencing court in this case, and Judge Simon actually did suggest that he found the original sentence to suggest that perhaps there were two separate that the original court had viewed this as two separate priors rather than three separate priors.
You know, I didn't see it that way, I have to tell you. I mean, although Judge Simon was sympathetic to your, you know, when you argued Hudspeth, he seems to have said that Mr. Elliott's three burglaries would all be qualifying convictions under this circuit's law and every other circuit's law.
Yes, Your Honor. He did specifically state that he was bound by the Hudspeth decision, which requires only to look at the sequence of prior convictions, the sequence of the facts underlying those prior convictions.
Yeah, but the fact that he said that it would all three would all be qualifying convictions makes me think that the outcome really would be no different without Hudspeth.
No, Your Honor. I think that I would disagree to the extent that Judge Simon specifically stated that he was bound by Hudspeth to limit his inquiry. He stated that he agreed that overall this appeared to be a crime spree. These three individual convictions appeared to be related within a crime spree. However, that was simply not an inquiry that was available to him. He was not allowed to consider whether those were related as a crime spree.
Okay, here's the quote. Clearly, when somebody commits three burglaries over the course of 5 days, under the way the Seventh Circuit, and for that matter, every other circuit, it appears, has interpreted 924E, those would all be qualifying convictions. And that's in your brief.
Yes, Your Honor. Because I believe that that explains how Judge Simon viewed his own inquiry as limited to the prior holdings of this court and the way that he had interpreted the prior holdings of other circuits. Of course, there are other circuit decisions that have been cited in the brief that would not coincide with that inquiry into only simultaneous actions. For example, the Eighth Circuit's Willoughby case, in which a defendant first made one drug sale and then made a second drug sale.
But look, this is a, you know, this would not be the case, you know, I mean, everyone knows where I was on Hudspeth, but this would not be the case. He didn't burglarize three adjacent residences in one unified crime spree. His crimes were separated from one another at least by a day and took place in totally different locations.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's actually the what I would like to do is leave that focus into these narrow inquiries. Those are all relevant factors, but it's not a salient distinction between cases to narrow our inquiry into only those three factors, the differences in locations, the differences in days. There are many factors that suggest that this is a crime spree, which Judge Simon recognized. However, he did not find that the coexistence of co-defendants or the fact that these were very limited, it was only a 5-day crime spree.
Oh, my. Was he free to cease and desist from further criminal activity?
Yes, Your Honor, but so were the defendants in many of these other cases. For example, United States versus Town, that defendant first kidnapped an individual and then later on in that same day sexually assaulted that victim. And yet the Second Circuit found that those two were a single criminal act for the purposes of the Armed Career Criminal Act. Similarly,
all encompassed in one kidnapping.
God almighty.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
It was all, the second act was encompassed in the first kidnapping.
Well, Your Honor, for example, in the Willoughby case where an individual makes one drug sale to one individual and then another drug sale to another individual,
A drug sale? Subsequent sales you're talking about?
Yes, subsequent sales. They were only separated by a very limited amount of time, but certainly he could have determined that he didn't want to make a second drug sale. He certainly could have ceased and desisted after his first drug sale. And certainly the individual who had kidnapped the woman could have ceased and desisted from any further criminal action. His entire criminal action could have been simply to kidnap and not then to commit another crime, which is sexual assault. All of those cases would have been determined differently if we only look at the sequence of an individual's, if we look beyond the sequence.
So in your view, would a common motive or impetus, a drug habit, for example, be enough to unify crimes that occur on separate days?
Well, Your Honor, in some cases, that may suggest that there is a unification. In this case, that is one of the factors that we suggested did unify these crimes. But overall, we cannot establish a test. What we have learned through experience of all of these different factual scenarios...
But we did. We have Hudspeth in this.
Your Honor, I would propose that Hudspeth has shown to be unworkable. It simply does not respond to the factual variances that we see time and time again. This court had a very recent case which was cited by the government after a briefing in which an individual whose three crimes that were related in a very short period of time, 30 years prior, was found to be an armed career criminal, and the court there similarly was limited in its inquiry. The factual variances that we have seen time and time again simply show that a narrow test that such as the one that is proffered in Hudspeth is not workable. We need a totality of the circumstances test to properly respond to the factual variances that are presented by these cases.
Well, this one works. If you had three bank robberies, could be the same bank, three different, one week, exactly the same way, same person, same everything, just got different money. You're going to say that's the same crime?
It would be possible that that would be the same crime. I think that in that case we would have to look at the surrounding circumstances as to was that individual continually motivated to rob the same bank for the same, did he have the same goal, something beyond just that he wanted to rob a bank.
Made it very similar. These are totally different, even though they happen to be home burglaries. Different house, different place, different time. Could have stopped doing it.
Your Honor, actually, it's very similar. These were all apartments in basically the same apartment complex. They were on different days, but again, the overall motivation was the same, that he needed money for a very specific purpose, and within that 5 days, he continued to try to get money for that specific purpose.
Thank you so much. Okay. Ms. Kirchhoff.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Emily Kirchhoff on behalf of the United States. Hudspeth, this Court's en banc decision, controls this case. Mr. Elliott robbed three different residences on three different days in a 5-day span. There were different victims for each offense. In the cases cited by Mr. Elliott in his brief...
And how old was Mr. Elliott? He was 21?
I believe he
18?
Was 18.
And how old was he at the time that he was sentenced as a career criminal?
I believe 32. He was born in 1979, and he was sentenced in 2011.
And no real crimes since then, in between there?
He has... numerous convictions for theft and conversion and operating while intoxicated. So none of those offenses rise to the level of burglary. However, he has not, like the defendant in Nigg, had a quote-unquote clean or minimal record since the time that he had the three burglary convictions in 1998.
So in this case, it would not be unlike, as you said, in the defendant in Nigg, where he had had, 40 years or 30, adult life?
Correct, and had participated and volunteered and done things to show that he had kind of moved away from his...
So by saying that, do you concede that there may be situations where you have to ask a question, is the intent behind the armed career criminal, what is a career? You do something at 18 and you pay for it 40 years later, there's no rehabilitation, you're going to pay for it?
Correct. That was the issue in front of this court in Hudspeth, was what was Congress's intent and what did they mean by a career criminal? And this court determined that the important inquiry was whether these crimes were simultaneous or sequential.
But we don't have that situation here, because this young man continued to...
Correct. He has had prior... additional convictions since the three burglary convictions rising from 5 days in 1998.
Do you know how close Hudspeth
was? I do, yes.
Yeah. Five.
However, the cases that the defendant cites as far as circuits adopting separate or different tests, all of those cases I believe, except for United States v. Sweeting, which is an 11th Circuit case, recognized that separate crimes committed against separate individuals on separate days are separate occasions or offenses committed on different occasions for purposes of Section 924E. If the Court has no further questions about Hudspeth, I will move on to the arguments. Almendarez-Torres creates an exception for fact-finding about prior convictions. This Court in Hendricks and Morris has stated that determining whether offenses were committed on separate occasions is part of the fact of a prior conviction inquiry, and there is no need to parse out the specific facts about whether these were committed on separate occasions for jury determination, Sixth Amendment right issues. The defendant cites Nijhawan for authority or to support the argument that Almendarez-Torres is no longer good law. However, that was dealing with a civil statute in an immigration context, and the Supreme Court in that case distinguished the Armed Career Criminal Act. The government's position is that Hendricks and Morris and Almendarez-Torres are still binding on this court and permit the district judge to make not only the findings that there was a prior conviction, but also that those convictions occurred on separate occasions. If there are no further questions, the government would respectfully request that the court affirm the judgment and sentence in this case. Thank you.
Ms. Prasad, you ran out of time, but I will give you another minute or two if you would like it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Two.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I'll be brief. I just want to clarify, it's very important to understand that there is no argument that the Nijhawan or Nijhawan case has overturned Almendarez-Torres. That's simply not the argument. The argument is, actually, the quote from Hendricks is that there is no precedent for parsing out the recidivism inquiry into understanding it as one part an inquiry into generic crime and one part an inquiry into fact-specific circumstances. But Nijhawan and, of course, the Ninth Circuit's interpretation of that case in the Doss case show that there is precedent for treating these two inquiries as separate. And in fact, that is the most consistent way to view these two inquiries. In both of those cases, the courts looked at the reference to a generic crime and then looked at qualifying language attached to that reference and realized that the qualifying language did not refer to a generic crime. It did not refer to elements of a generic crime. Instead, it referred to something fact-specific. And so the reason that this inquiry that Hendricks should be reconsidered is because now we understand that there is precedent for treating these two inquiries as distinct, and they may not all fall under Almendarez-Torres' exception. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Now, Ms. Prasad, you were appointed, weren't you?
Yes, I was, Your Honor.
So you have our thanks for working so hard. And
thank you very much.
A nice job. Thank you. And you, too, always. Ms. Kirchhoff.